Next case, Lockwood Alvarez v. Barr, 20-9502. Counsel for appellant, if you'd make your appearance and begin, please.
Good morning, Your Honor. This is James Lamb representing Mr. Carlos Lockwood. May it please the court. Mr. Lockwood's case is unique, the first reason being his unusual background. A Caucasian American military family adopted him as an infant, and he would in fact now be a U.S. citizen were it not for the fact that his adoptive parents failed to file a single form for him prior to his 18th birthday. He grew up here, was educated in the United States, and spoke no Spanish prior to his removal to Mexico. And throughout his life, he struggled to reconcile his Hispanic-Mexican heritage with his desire to be perceived as white and American, as Dr. Vogel noted at length in her mental health evaluation. In fact, so thoroughly does Lockwood come across as white and American that at the beginning of this case, he pursued DNA testing to rule out the possibility that his adoptive father was, in fact, his biological father. The second reason that this case stands out is for its two prior instances of torture at two different times and locations. Usually, even a single instance of torture is highly probative of a CAT claim, in particular probative of the predictive risk in the future of torture should the person be returned to their home country. And yet, here, the board denied relief despite not one but two instances of pretty well-documented prior torture, even stating that, even if it assumed that, in fact, Lockwood had been tortured twice and that the Mexican police conducted these instances, it would still deny. And the board's decision stems from several legal errors. The first is that the board misapplied its own precedent and that of the circuits on CAT claims involving generalized country conditions and speculative evidence to Lockwood's quite well-documented case. It also improperly placed a burden on Lockwood to demonstrate that he could not relocate within Mexico when no such burden appears in the CATs, the regulations, or indeed in case law. And
well,
finally,
on that issue, the immigration judge made that mistake. The BIA didn't make that mistake. Is that fair?
That's correct, Your Honor, in a sense. In other words, the immigration judge acknowledged that she was placing this burden on Mr. Lockwood. When the board reviewed the decision, interestingly, the board did not review any of Mr. Lockwood's legal contentions, including his contention that there was an improper burden shift. However, it did affirm the IJ's conclusion on relocation under a clear error analysis. In other words,
and that's the error on this point that you're relying on. It was the erroneous application of the clear error standard, not that the BIA had improperly required Mr. Lockwood to show that relocation had been foreclosed. Is that my understanding correctly?
I believe so, Your Honor. Yes, we're basically saying that the BIA should have reviewed that question, and given that we raised and preserved it in front of the board. And so turning first to the way in which the board erred in applying the substantial grounds standard under CAT, the board concluded that Mr. Lockwood had not established that relocation is foreclosed. And the board did not review the IJ's legal assertion that Lockwood, excuse me, I got a little sidetracked here. and so what happened here is the board applied its own case law on speculative and general claims. And an example of this, and this happened at both the IJ and the BIA level, is a matter of JFF. And this is a case that I believe both agency levels cited. And in matter of JFF, we have a case where a person from the Dominican Republic on psychiatric medication applied for CAT protection. And the IJ assumed without any evidence that that medication would not be available in the Dominican Republic, that without it, this person would become uncontrollable, would encounter the police, would be arrested, would be incarcerated, and then finally would be tortured while in prison. And so what the Attorney General did on review is decide that that kind of undocumented chain of speculation, not with each step in the chain not proven, is insufficient to demonstrate a CAT claim. And the other cases that the board and the IJ cite almost uniformly deal with very similarly sparse evidentiary records. In almost no instance that I'm aware of, in any instance of actual substantiated past torture, and very little in the way even of particularized threats. And there's only one case that the IJ cited that in fact involved an affirmance of a CAT grant. And that is a matter of GA, 23 INN Decision 366. And this case, I think, is significant because in matter of GA, the respondent also was facing removal back to his home country of Iran after being convicted of a drug trafficking offense. And so the BIA relied, it appears, solely on his own testimony that his fair skin, that his last name, and that his prior criminal record and his lengthy period of time in the United States would be sufficient upon removal to Iran to bring him to the attention of authorities, and that they would ultimately torture him because he basically he was a Christian and had lived in the United States for a long time and had a criminal history. In this case, there was no past torture. There were not even any instances of past threats. And I think that this is important because what the BIA did was it took that testimony from the respondent, and then it looked very carefully and in depth at the respondent's country conditions evidence. And most of this country conditions evidence was generalized country conditions evidence. It's the kind of evidence that the regulation in 8 CFR 1208.16C directs the agency to consider. And the board, in its opinion, specifically cited four different country conditions reports, including two very general reports from the Department of State, and said it was considering this evidence in the aggregate, the respondent's testimony on the one hand, and this generalized country conditions on the other. And it concluded that, in fact, this person had a risk of torture. Now, Lockwood's case is, I think, very similar in key respects to that in matter of GA, except that his case is better documented. He can show two prior instances of torture, and he can show a plethora, frankly, of country conditions evidence ranging from the general, so country conditions reports like Department of State country conditions reports, Human Rights Watch reports, and so forth. And he can and he adduced evidence that's very specific, for example, photographs of Puerto Vallarta and Tijuana City police vehicles matching the descriptions he gave both to the asylum officer during his initial interview at the border and later in testimony to the immigration judge.
You don't question, do you, that the threat, though, has to be particularized to Mr. Lockwood? It's not a question of whether Mexico is a horrible place. It's not a question of whether, let's assume that people get routinely, arbitrarily tortured in Mexico. Let's make that assumption. Even if that were true, that would not mean that your client was targeted for a torture, and therefore that would not be enough. I mean, do you accept the premise that it has to be particularized to him, that you have to, there, the predictive judgment in question is that either government officials would target him or others would target him with the acquiescence of the government? I mean, do you accept that premise?
I do, Your Honor, and I accept it to the extent that we can assume that the majority of the population in Mexico will not be tortured during their lifetimes. If we assume that that's true, then I think it's fair to place a burden on the applicant to demonstrate a particularized risk. In other words, some way in which they stand out from the generalized population. But I also think we have to recognize that that's really an analytical tool.
Well, wait a minute. My hypothetical implied that the country conditions were poor and that many people were tortured. Even if that were the case, your client would have to indicate that he had a particularized reason to believe he would be tortured. In other words, they would have to target him for torture. Do you accept that premise?
I do, Your Honor. Again, I have to say that so long as we can accept that we're not reaching a level where more than 50% of the population is experiencing torture, because the CAT only requires that torture be more likely than not and by or at the instigation or with the acquiescence of government officials.
But it has to be torture that's directed at the individual is the point that I'm getting at.
Is that the case?
And it has, Mr. Lockwood has to show that somebody wanted to torture him in particular.
He has to show that he has a risk of torture in the home country. It doesn't have to be a particular group of individuals, as it would, and I note this, as it would were this a statutory withholding of removal or other persecution-based claim case, where that the motive of the persecutors becomes important. The only question in a CAT case is objectively whether the person faces a greater than 50% likelihood of torture by officials or with their acquiescence. And in fact, that is exactly the case that the board faced in matter of GA. nobody was named as the persecutors in GA. It wasn't necessarily going to be a particular person or agency within Iran. It was simply that he was going to become come to the attention of the authorities. And so in this case, we find it highly probative that Mr. Lockwood was tortured at two different times and at two different locations. And I believe we've adduced a substantial amount of evidence that these were more likely than not Mexican police officers or people acting with their acquiescence. And in fact, in its review, the BIA seems to have assumed those points arguendo, at least to the extent that it said that even if they assumed that these were Mexican cops, and even if they assumed that they tortured Mr. Lockwood, he still couldn't establish a substantial likelihood. And the problem here is that, not to be flip, but Lockwood, it seems, would have to be an incredibly unlucky person to be just an average Mexican at the wrong place at the wrong time twice on two different times and locations. And so I believe that that in itself strongly suggests that Lockwood has particularized characteristics that heighten his risk.
Didn't Mr. Lockwood live in Mexico for 2 years without being tortured?
He did. And that was something that I think the IJ and the board gave a lot of weight to.
And why shouldn't? I mean, if he's able to find a place to live for 2 years without being tortured, why is it not fair to say predictively that it's not, that there's not a substantial likelihood that he will be tortured in the future?
Well, Your Honor, the first thing I would say is that there is no time window within which CAT claims have to play out. And there, in fact, was a substantial period of time between the first instance and the second instance of torture. And so then what happens is, after the second instance of torture, Lockwood returns to a different part of Mexico, and he lives for a time with an American pastor in a gated community. And at that point, his problems began again when he moved out of the gated community. And he once again, as he testified, began to face harassment by people, particularly police officers, who assumed that he was essentially a Caucasian American. And during testimony at one point, he described an incident where this happened, and the police began asking him specifically, where are the drugs? Where is this? Where is that? And Lockwood tried to tell them, hey, I'm a Mexican citizen. And they simply would not believe that. And so what I think we see in Lockwood's second attempt at relocation is a circumstance where the same particularized characteristics that brought him to the attention of his torturers on the previous two occasions were showing themselves again. And ultimately, Lockwood returned to the United States border to seek relief after being threatened with death by somebody who, you know, may or may not have also been involved with Mexican law enforcement. And one more point I'd like to make about this is that these claims, specifically of Mexican police officers torturing people with cigarettes, burning them for money, have been recognized in other cases. And we cited in briefing two. One from 2015 out of the Seventh Circuit, Rodriguez-Molinaro v. Lynch, and another one out of the Ninth Circuit from 2017, Barajas-Romero v. Lynch, where the respondent testified that off-duty cops showed up at his house, began asking him for money, and when he didn't provide it, began burning him with cigarettes. And in both those cases, the petitions were granted and the cases were remanded. And so I think that it is wrong of the immigration judge to put so much weight on the fact that Lockwood was able to live for a time in Mexico without being tortured in light of his two prior instances of torture. And if there are no other questions, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Mr. Lamb, can I ask you, I'm sorry to eat up and get your rebuttal, but I do have a question, and I want to give you an opportunity to disabuse me of this. It seems to me that you have a very good argument that he is anglicized, that that's the reason he was targeted twice in Tijuana and Puerto Vallarta in different places and after he left the gated community. The problem that I see for this part of your argument is that we have a very narrow standard of review. And if the BIA had substantial evidence in which to make a contrary finding, and that is that his anglicized characteristics were not so significant that they would have made him a target if he were to go back now, it seems to me that we would be hard pressed to say that that viewing the evidence in the light basically favorable in favor of the ruling, that there wasn't enough evidence to support that conclusion. Why am I wrong about that?
Your Honor, I think that this case can be resolved on legal review, and I see my time is up, and I'll try to answer briefly. The BIA cited the wrong types of cases in support of its contention that there was no particularized risk here. And they cited cases where, as I said, there was no past torture, very little evidence of past persecution, very little evidence at all. And so I think that we can see that the BIA, what the BIA should have done was analyze this case legally, like it did the case at issue in matter of GA. And I'll, I see that my time is up. Thank you.
I apologize to you, Mr. Leia, for eating up into your rebuttal.
Thank you for the question, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. Raya Jarwan, may it please the court, Raya Jarwan on behalf of the Attorney General is the respondent in this matter. This case does turn on whether Mr. Alvarez has met his burden of proof to demonstrate eligibility for deferral of removal. And that burden requires that he meet this more likely than not standard. That is his burden to meet this standard. Not the government's burden. And that is a more, it's a greater than 50% standard, as counsel stated. And he has simply not met that burden, A, because of the particularized threat of future torture, and B, because of his ability to internally relocate.
Why don't you talk about the relocation? It is his burden, as you posited, but why did he not fail to satisfy the burden that relocating was not really an option that would be beneficial to him to avoid torture?
If I understand your question, Your Honor, you're asking why he didn't meet his relocation burden?
Yes, that's what I'm asking.
He didn't meet it because he was actually able to relocate and live for 2 years in Mexico without harm. The reason he left Mexico, according to the record, is because he had some employment dispute over some financial payment with an individual named Tony. But in those 2 years,
I think his argument is a legal one, that the immigration judge had erred not in the ultimate factual finding, but in placing the burden on the petitioner to show that relocation would be impossible. And what he's saying, I think, is that that's an erroneous standard. The standard, as he points out, is what the BIA said, which is completely different than what the immigration judge said.
I don't agree with counsel's contention that this was an incorrect standard that the agency used. Under the Hernandez case that I cited in my brief, this circuit does not follow the Ninth Circuit's relocation standard. The Ninth Circuit in Maldonado makes relocation a dispositive factor and burden shifts. We do not have that standard here. What we have here is, according to the Hernandez case, which is a 2016 case, that the Lemus-Galvis case is the one that this court has cited to, which is the impossibility standard. But I don't agree with counsel's contention, and the board also does not provide the incorrect, and neither does the immigration judge, does not provide an incorrect standard. In fact, the agency makes it quite clear this was his burden to show that he could not internally relocate. And that's in the regulation, the ability to internally relocate. That is part of the overall standard or number of factors that this petitioner must demonstrate. And he lived in Mexico for, I believe the record indicated, from 2011 to 2018. He is claiming that there were two incidents in 2016 in which he was tortured. But aside from those, he has been able to internally relocate within Mexico safely.
So the language that relocation was foreclosed, he did not establish that relocation was foreclosed. In your view, that is consistent with the legal standard that's applicable here, right?
Yes. Based on the pin site is for the Hernandez-Torres versus Lynch case, it was an unpublished decision, but it was a 2016 decision in which this court discusses the Ninth Circuit pre-Maldonado standard. And it discusses that the a drug cartel had been involved in some kind of a turf war. And the Ninth Circuit determined that substantial evidence supported the denial of CAT because the petitioner failed to establish that internal relocation within Mexico is impossible. And that same reasoning applies here. That's the quote from this court in that unpublished decision. But regardless, I would also point to the fact that there was this particularized risk of future torture as well. So there's multiple factors that must be considered here. And Mr. Alvarez did not make a showing of that particularized risk.
Let's talk about that for a second. Doing some research, I came across a Fourth Circuit case in Rodriguez-Arias, 915 F3rd, the Penn site is 973, where you had an individual who was a gang member in the United States. He had gang tattoos. When he went to Mexico, part of what allowed him to get CAT relief was the fact that he would be targeted by three different groups, the police, other gang members, vigilantes, because he presented as having these gang tattoos, essentially for purposes of this, and ones that could not be effaced. In this situation, why is that not analogous to Mr. Lockwood Alvarez, who's saying, I present as a white American, and that is not something I can do anything about, and therefore I will continually be targeted, just as this individual with tattoos, by virtue of that? Why does that logic not apply?
Well, first, I want to make clear that obviously there's the difference between the asylum and withholding standard and the
burden of proof. No, this was a CAT case. I looked specifically to make sure it was.
Okay. So even in a situation where the claim is that he looks more Anglo and that's why he's targeted, the CAT does not have a motive requirement. There's no requirement that the persecutors have a reason to go after this particular individual.
That's not where I'm going. What I'm going is the predictive judgment that he would be tortured. His explanation for validating his predictive judgment is, look at how I look, and I will continually be hit upon. And so we're not talking about whether, you know, he's being persecuted for being white. What we're talking about is it makes it likely, more likely than not, that he will be persecuted, substantial likelihood. And I'll stop using the word persecuted because that gets us in a different realm, that he will be tortured.
But I think that his claim is no different than many anglicized Mexicans. And the point of CAT is to provide protection for those who specifically would be individually targeted.
His claim is targeted, how he presents, though. It's not that he doesn't speak Spanish. It's that when he walks down the road, he will be identified as other. And because he's identified as other, there's a substantial likelihood that there will be adverse actions in the nature of torture directed at him because he is other. Why is that not good enough?
The government's position is that does not rise to the more likely than not standard. He lived there for 7 years and he is providing us two instances only. That does not meet the more likely than not standard. And the board case law discusses the words individually targeted or particularized risk. Matter of GK says that the petitioner must show that he would more likely than not be individually targeted upon his return to Ghana, rather than providing vague generalized evidence of criminality. Certainly many people are extorted in Mexico. Certainly many people are targeted for all sorts of reasons. His claim is that he looked like he had money. The individual stopped their trucks and asked him if he had money and then threw him in the back of the trucks. He also claimed that it was because he was anglicized, but there were other instances in which he claimed that the police harassed him, where he claimed it was because he was anglicized and he was not tortured. So again, he has to meet the more likely.
Maybe I don't know that he's saying that because I'm anglicized, every single Mexican police officer is going to torture me. But what he is saying is that to follow up on Judge Holmes' questioning, that will make him a target. And I wonder if the immigration judge didn't simply misunderstand the claim when the immigration judge said on page 9, without more, it is unclear why these individuals, in other words, the assailants from these two prior episodes, would still seek to harm him in the future.
I think that the
and then court, they go on to say that he wasn't able to pay the ransom, so why would he continue to be targeted? Well, that does suggest that the immigration judge just simply didn't understand the petitioner's claim. Obviously, he's not saying that these same Mexican police are still going to try to get my $10,000. He's saying that because I'm anglicized, that's just as Judge Holmes pointed out, that that's going to continue to differentiate him from everybody else in Mexico.
But I think the immigration judge was focusing on the speculative nature of this claim. Again, many people who are anglicized in Mexico, who look more Anglo, are not tortured. And he's providing
us. Did the immigration judge say that?
The immigration judge considered the country conditions evidence as a whole and determined that such vague evidence of generalized violence does not meet the standard of more likely than not, and provide, and there's case law that allows this court to also agree with that statement. In Lysak v. Lynch, it affirmed the board's statement that Lysak's reliance on country conditions information was generalized evidence of violence and crime not particular to him, which is insufficient to demonstrate the more likely than not standard. Again, just simply being someone who looks Anglo and who is stopped twice in 8 years does not rise to a more than 50% standard. Mr. Lamb discussed the GA case, matter of GA, quite extensively. But in that case, that's actually quite distinguishable because the country conditions evidence there was specifically tailored to address somebody in the petitioner's position. He was an Iranian Christian of Armenian descent. He was known to have been convicted of a controlled substance violation. He was known to have spent a significant amount of time living in the U.S., and he testified specifically that he would be identifiable by government authorities at the airport as a non-Muslim ethnic minority based solely on his surname. And the loss of his legal status in the United States would also focus the attention of Iranian authorities on investigating his criminal history and background. And the State Department reports confirm this type of search and extensive questioning of these specific types of petitioners. So that's very different from this general claim that, well, I look anglicized and thus I'm more likely than not to be tortured. But I would also add that I think the immigration judge did point to something very important. This individual was stopped twice and did not provide any ransom money. He did not have anything to give them, and he was released twice, which undermines his argument that he is going to continually be tortured in Mexico if we don't know who these individuals were. We don't know if they'll know if he's back in Mexico. We don't know why they would target him again 4 years after he's left. And we don't know why they would target him at all, quite frankly, if he's already been harassed and has provided them nothing.
I find that argument to be very puzzling. No one is suggesting that it's going to be the same assailants the next time. I mean, and so the fact that he didn't give money to the two people in the two episodes where he was tortured doesn't mean there isn't going to be another group of people who are going to try their luck, does it?
Certainly, there might be criminals generally,
government officials. That's what
or police officers. Yes,
okay.
The board did give him that benefit. It could be police officers. It could be private individuals. But being a victim, a crime victim, does not necessarily meet the more likely than not standard. There are plenty of crime victims in Mexico, and just simply being fearful of those instances of crime, simply being fearful of the general country conditions in a specific country, that means we would have to provide a torture grant to millions and hundreds of individuals.
I get that, but the point I'm making is I thought that the argument that you were making and the one that the immigration judge articulated was simply the notion that I didn't give them money when they tortured me suggests that cuts against me in a predictive judgment that I will be tortured again. And that is logically, I don't see how those two things go together unless you're talking about the exact same people who tortured me in the two prior incidents. And we're not talking about that, right?
Where I think the immigration judge may have been referring, and I can only speculate here, but I think there was testimony that Mr. Alvarez believed but was not sure that one of the police officers was the same in the two instances. But he was very clear that he really didn't know. He was simply speculating. So the immigration judge may have been responding to that, but that was only one part of the immigration judge's overall analysis. The immigration judge also said, respondent has not identified any threats of harm since leaving Mexico, or that those who harmed him in the past are still motivated to find and harm him. He believes that he would be extorted again, but it's unclear why any police would seek to extort him in the future.
Okay, you got 4 seconds. Tell me quickly. I took some of it. We'll just stop. thank you, counsel, for your
argument. Thank you, Your Honors.
Argument, case is submitted. Thank you, counsel.